hope you have enjoyed Jubilation, Sounds of Joy and Praise, which was conceived, compiled, produced, and directed by the Midnight Ravers.
Terry Wilson, Nate the Dubologist Walker, Sir W. Henry Eccleston, and Sean Rhodes.
Engineered, edited, and mixed by the great Sean Rhodes. Special mixes by yours truly, Nate the Dubologist Walker.
Special thanks to Annette Walker, Mizan Nunes, Corey Derrick, and Lynn Wilson, Hapti Selassie, Janet Coleman, Kathy Davis, and the listeners and supporters of the Midnight Ravers and WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
This is Sean Rhodes. Please continue to listen to the Midnight Ravers on Fridays, and please support WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, because if there's no WBAI, there will be no Midnight Ravers. If you'd like to get in contact with us, you can visit our website at www.midnightravers.org, MIDNIGHTRAVERS.org.
Executive Producer, Terry Wilson. Copyright, The Midnight Ravers.
I'm Carlton Brooks. You are listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, the best radio station you'll ever hear.
This is radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smart his guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
By the angle of my astrolabe, I suspect it is about 5 a.m., and you're listening to all. It's back to school time! Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about a few things here, and you can find out a little bit more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest back of the book program links. Click on that. You'll get to the web page for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 148th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we can't reference them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story in the various realities to which even humans can't access. We remain at the depleted number of 121 followers on Twitter. Oh, my. But still, everyone looks at that and says, what a huge number. The next WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, September 13th at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. The elections for the local station board are going on. If you contributed enough to become a member by June 30th, you'll get to vote. There is apparently yet another candidates debate on WBAI today from 4 to 6 p.m. The Centers for Disease Control website isn't giving us all that much information about COVID-19 in America, although they are saying that total deaths in America have reached 1,139,457, which means that 855 people have died of COVID-19 since our last program 1 week ago. It's about the same as the previous week, within like five deaths of the previous week, which means it's still quite a few people dying there. We're hoping to get our COVID-19 booster EG.5 variant shots in time to avoid getting sick this autumn.
Well, and we're hoping that it will work for the latest variant that seems to be emerging. Now, all these variants are sub-variants of the Omicron sub-variant, which... I can't even remember now when Omicron showed up. Was it in? It was bad. Whenever it showed up, it was a bad one, like the very beginning. So there's the variant BA.2.86, and that seems to be something that is really interesting to scientists because it has 30 new mutations on the protein spike, and that's the thing. That usually, if you have so many mutations like that, I've read that the variant doesn't spread around as much, but apparently this one does, and it's shown up since July in a bunch of countries, including here now, and they're checking the wastewater and they see it's in there. So if it's in there, that means more than just a couple of people have this new variant. They're hoping that the new shot will work. They said they think right now it will give protection, some protection from this. I mean, you could still get sick, but not horribly sick. And they don't think it's going to be any deadlier than anything else. So that's good. But man.
One thing we have to keep in mind is we kept talking about as the Omicron variants, plural, showed up more and more, about how tremendously infectious this is. It makes chicken pox look like something very, very slow and hard to catch. And so this is all still that. This stuff is all very, very infectious. If you just get near somebody with it and they just breathe, you can get infected from that. They don't have to cough. They don't have to sneeze. Just simple breathing will put out enough virus particles, and these viruses are so infectious, they're going to just grab right on and go after you. And that's why the vaccines are useful, because they fight the damn things and go after those spikes. The pandemic is not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on for the most part. We've both gotten our bivalent vaccinations and our bivalent booster shots. We're hearing that the new boosters are going to be ready soon, but surely by next month, October. We'll probably wait until mid-October to get our new booster shot against COVID-19 and the latest flu shot at the same time. It's a ritual we've gone through for the past couple of years. It's possible if they approve it in time, we also may end up getting a free RSV shot, because old folks need that too. God, all these shots we're going to have to get. We said goodbye to the middle third a couple of days ago. Yeah, the middle third is the middle third of the year, the months of May, June, July, and August. And now that it's September, Labor Day weekend, we are here saying, oh, there it went. We have seen the last of the middle third of 2023. That's too bad. And I didn't get out for any fun this middle third. I only went out to get to the VA hospital and to the dentist. Better luck next year, I hope. And we have an updated program note. We were suddenly informed this past Tuesday that we are, in fact, preempted on September 9th, which would be our next program, and that's when we had planned to have our anniversary program. So we will be celebrating the 37th anniversary of this radio program 2 weeks from now on September 16th, which is also my parents' wedding anniversary. They're no longer around to celebrate it, but there it was that. Back of the Book first aired on September 8th, 1986, and the 9th was the closest air date to that date this year. But, you know, the big pitching emergency has happened, and so we're preempted. But, yeah, we'll be on again on September 16th for our 37th anniversary radio program. As noted at the top of this program, it is indeed back to school time. Yeah, I didn't like going back to school. Oh, I always liked being off, but, you know, they forced you to go back to school. There was nothing you could do about it. I guess you could run away or something, but I didn't do that. But right now, it's back to school time, and it's not just a sale. I first went to a school for kindergarten. And I went to school at PS 39 in Brooklyn. It's located on 6th Avenue and 8th Street. It's on the corner there. And I was 5 years old, and I went to PS 39, and we got me in there, and I was, interestingly, the odd kid out. Something that would happen to me for the rest of my life. And when we got there, I think I was an extra kid. And what kindergarten had was you had these round tables and you had chairs that the kids sat around them on. And the chairs were, you know, they matched the table. And since I was an extra, they didn't have a chair because there was a certain number of chairs for each one of these tables. So they brought over a chair from elsewhere in the room. It was different from everybody else's. And I sat in that. And every day when I came in, I had to go get a separate chair and bring it in and put it there. Unless one of the kids at my table was absent. And then I got to sit in a chair like everybody else. So that was stuff going on there. And at one point, my mother asked me how old my kindergarten teacher was. This was early on before, you know, she met her. And because what happened was she had to bring me up and I was then sent in and she didn't see the teacher. And at PS 39, most of the kids go up the front steps to get in. But for kindergarten, the kindergarten has a separate entrance on the schoolyard. And it's a double door. And once the school starts, they lock it. You can't get in. One time we did have to bring me because I was late. My mother had me late. I mean, how could I be late? I was five. What am I going to do? You know, I was smoking in the shower. So I'm a little late today. So we had to go talk to people. And it was a whole thing. But my mother asked me how old the teacher was. I don't know if I should say her name. I told her the teacher was old, and when my mother saw the teacher, she saw that the teacher was in her early 20s. You know, to a five-year-old, that's pretty old. You know, she's an old person, and all the adults are old people. Now, if she's still around, she'd be in her 90s. So I don't know if I should mention her name. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, go ahead.
Miss Slater. Miss Slater was my kindergarten teacher. And so she would be in her 90s now because she was in her early 20s 70 years ago. See, I did learn how to add. And, oh, boy, but that was Miss Slater, and it was okay. And, yeah, there were all sorts of things that went on in there. And, you know, one of the things that happened was that in that school in kindergarten was you had to do coloring and things. The thing I liked the best was when they just left us alone and let us, you know, interact with each other. And because they had a dollhouse in there, and it was a house, you know. It wasn't just a little thing you put dolls in. You'd go and sit inside it, and you could play milkman, and it was a little milk that, you know, wooden milk bottles and a wooden thing that you would wheel around. And, oh, it's a milkman. You know, you could play all that stuff. That was fun. Playing I liked. Having them read stories, that was okay too. And then, of course, I failed colors. The teacher put out a bunch of pieces of construction paper on the floor, and she gave you a pointer. I don't know if they still have this. It's a long dowel, wooden dowel, with a rubber tip, pointy rubber tip at the end. Used in later school scenarios to whip and beat children. Anyway, in this case, it was just you got one and you pointed to a color, to one of the sheets, and you named the color. I failed colors. And then, at one point, however, we were doing something, and she was teaching us to count, and people were counting up to, like, five. So, okay. And so the whole class, well, you got to envisage five-year-olds, a class of five-year-olds. One, two, three, four, five. And then she did something, it would go again. Well, so I'm bored, and I'm now going, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. I counted to 20 and didn't realize everybody else had shut up. And the teacher says, well, that's very good, you know. And so because you can count up to 20, come on up here in front of the class. And she gave me this tom-tom thing, and it was it's a plastic toy with a rubber sheet stretched over an open end, and you get a little rubber thing, drumstick, to hit it with. It's a rubber ball at the end of a wooden dowel, a small wooden dowel, and you hit there and you pound on it. And I think the deal was that as everybody else counted, I was to hit that thing. And oh, it was torture. I think it was supposed to be a reward. I took it as punishment. And so I'm going, oh, no, jeez, I don't want this. So anyway, there was that. And then I had problems with the coloring because my fingers were never strong. They were weak. And you go, you start coloring in there. And no, you got to color more than that, because I would like color. Zip, zip, zip. Well, that's colored. No, you've got to fill all of this space with crayon. Okay, it's like that crummy paper. It's almost newsprint. When you rub the crayon on it, it doesn't get everywhere. You got to really bear down on it because there are, like, you know, little dips in the paper, and it just doesn't get in there so easily. But it was required that they be filled in. So I'm in there doing that, and oh, this is boring as hell to me. I don't want to do this. And now and again, I would sneak away and go play, because we would do it. And then at the end of the time, I wasn't nearly done yet. I had to catch up. So during playtime, which I liked, I had to sit there grinding away with this damned crayon. And, you know, so I would sneak away sometimes. And I guess the teacher let me get away with it here and there for a little while. But then she'd come over and say, okay, you got to get over here. Get back to, you know, the ball and chain and grind that crayon. And so we would do this. And we had various holidays and all. And then we get to Easter time, which was interesting because we had some Jewish kids in there, and, you know, it never occurred to me what's going to go on here. And I didn't have any idea about any organized superstitions in those days. So we are doing this stuff, and it's for Easter, and you have to make an Easter basket. And you have to make – and she shows us how it's going to be, and it has a little strap, so it's a piece of – a rectangular piece of paper that you're going to bend, and then you've got a bigger piece of paper that's going to be cut in a certain way, and you've got to color the entire damn thing with your crayons that somehow just don't seem to fill up the space very easily. So I'm grinding away at that, and, you know, day after day doing this. I think, however, we moved before Easter, and so the fruits of my labor were never able to bear me any good stuff. So there we went. I knew the end of kindergarten as labor I didn't like, and yet other kids were going to look forward to getting something because they'll put something in your little Easter basket, some candy or some crap. And, you know, so that was how it was going to be, but I didn't get any. We moved. We were 8 blocks away. Nine blocks if you count, because we moved to from 9th Street between 4th and 5th Avenue and – no, between 5th and 6th Avenue, and we moved to 1st Street and 7th Avenue, so it was 7 blocks away. And it's a big place, and I never went back there. So that was kindergarten, not real school, but kindergarten. And then I had off, and I said, okay, I don't have to play with trying to get that damn crayon to fill in all that space. Oh, that's so good. I can goof off out here, play with toys, look at things, examine these bugs that are crawling around and all of this kind of thing, and just look around at stuff. And that was good. I had this period of time, and it was what? April, May, June, July, August. I had like 5 months, which if you're 5 years old, 5 months is a long time. So I had 5 months of reprieve from the oppression of having to be in kindergarten. Of course, it couldn't last. At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. She is radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. Comes September, Labor Day shows up, and my mother is going in to St. Francis Xavier's School with me, dragging me along, and she goes to the principal to register me to be in St. Francis Xavier's School. Well, we get there, and because this is at 763 President Street, it's between 6th and 7th Avenues in Brooklyn, and the principal, Brother Dennis, was not sure that we qualified to be in that school. In fact, he may have been right. It may be that where we lived was just across the border of the parish. I might have had to have gone to another school that was a bit south of where we were, and other kids who were on Garfield Place, they had to go to that one. And they had nuns there, and they had to go to that school. So, but some of the kids on Garfield, you know, they did go to St. Francis Xavier's. So it was a real mix. Some kids got in one, and other kids were told you have to go to the other. So my mother argued with Brother Dennis, and he castigated her for waiting a full month after I'd been born to get me baptized. What if he had died? What, you know, okay, that was like 6 years ago, Jack. Wah, you know? It ain't your kid, and, you know, so if your God is going to throw a kid into limbo forever because his mother didn't get him baptized, didn't have anybody throw some water on his face and say magic words, get off it, Brother Dennis. Anyway, so he was going after. I remember being there for that and saying, well, what the hell? I didn't say what the hell in those days, but I was saying, wow, what is this? And so the deal is I got in. And so my mother, you know, prevailed against Brother Dennis, and I was admitted to St. Francis Xavier's School. So we go there. It's the first day of real school for me. I'm going to the first grade, and it's 70 years ago this month, September 1953. Nikita Khrushchev is taking over the Soviet Union after Uncle Joe had died 6 months earlier. I don't think I was really up on that particular fact, and I was more interested in what Howdy Doody was doing at that point in time. But anyway, so we went in there, and we brought me in. I was 36 inches tall, and I weighed 36 pounds, which is, I was a skinny kid. And I remember that because it was 36 and 36. I said, oh, look at that. And the teacher was Miss Eleanor A. Donnelly. I have no qualms about saying her name because Ms. Donnelly was not young. She was not in her early 20s. She looks, from the photograph, she looks to have been probably in her 60s, you think, about that?
I think so, yes.
And so if she was in her 60s 70 years ago, she's probably not with us, or else she's 150 years old. So, really, that would be it. 70 and 60, right? Yeah. No, 130 years old. She'd be 130 years old. But maybe 150, I don't know. She, you know, we figure she was about that. She was about 60-ish. She could have been older. I'll talk about somebody else who was older later. But anyway, so Miss Donnelly was the teacher, and getting into the school was sort of a trip. There were huge metal doors as the main door you went into, and that was the door the first grade had to go in through. Now, when, later on, you ended up going into the schoolyard and waited there, and there was a whole ritual for how you went to school. But for the first grade, you went in and you opened that huge door and you walked down the hall and you went to the first grade classroom. And I'm not sure those doors, they may have been bronze. It wasn't solid bronze. It was like bronze outer part and, I don't know, cork on the inside. I don't know what it was. No, old newspapers maybe on the inside. But they didn't really close well, which was good, because one time they did close and no kids could get in. Anyway, I'm not sure. They might have been hollow, and it's entirely possible. And I don't think they were in the best shape, those doors, but, you know, because the bottoms had some, like, sharp bits sticking out. I suspect that in the intervening years, somebody said, hey, look at that. This is a good way for a kid to slice their ankles and have their parents sue us for half the national debt. So I'm sure those doors are long gone. In any event, the first grade entered the school through that door. And little kids would struggle to open that huge door in the winter. It didn't weigh all that much, but it was big. And if the wind was blowing, it was a sail. If the wind came out of what? The west? A west element of the wind would hit that door, and you would really have to try and wedge your tiny body in there and then push and shove your way through that door. So that was the door. The door was one of my introductions to the school. And so it's the first day of school. We were on the all-boys side of the school, of course. There's a boys' school and a girls' school, kept very separate. And we didn't know why, probably because, you know, girls have cooties, probably, you know. We didn't like girls. And anyway, so we were in the boys' side of the school. And we found that there were interesting seating arrangement. Miss Donnelly had an idea of how to put the children in seats that really helped them socially. The first seat in the first row was where the smartest boy sat. The teacher decided who that was. Now, as we got in there, and the mothers are bringing their brats in, one mother immediately shoved her son into that top seat in the classroom, which was a little bit comical because he was very obese for a six-year-old boy, as he had quite a struggle to squeeze him in there. I forget how many rows of seats there were. I think there were six or eight rows. I can't remember. Too long ago. 70 years ago. I just don't bloody well remember. And these were the old-fashioned desks that were bolted to the floor. and they'd been there since the school had opened in 1914. So you had the first seat in the first row. The first row was a good row to be in. Smart kids are in there. But you also had the last row. The last row was for the stupid kids, as the class culture had it. The kid who sat in the last seat of the last row was the stupidest boy in the class. The seating got rearranged very frequently. Miss Donnelly would do it sometimes more than once a day. And, not doing well on a pop quiz. We didn't call them pop quizzes in those days. It was a test. You would get a test, but it was just a sudden, okay, they're doing this. And it could even be not really a test, but just a thing. And she figures you didn't do well. And she might take an entire row of boys and swap them with another row of boys. Often just because, you know, if people were talking, you could get that too. Oh, no talking. No talking in class. Punishment. And anyway, so they would get moved, and you could move up and down in the seating order depending on the row and all of this. It was a lot of different things could happen to you. If Miss Donnelly didn't like something you said or the way you looked, you could be banished to the last seat in the last row. Although that seemed to be mostly the domain of one particular boy who wasn't that bright, but who got quite an education on how he might be treated for the rest of his life. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. It wasn't always completely clear exactly why somebody might be gotten up out of a seat and sent to a lesser seat. And usually that's the way it went, was people got sent, you know, off to the other side there. And on rare occasions, somebody would be who hadn't been in a higher row would come out of the lesser seats and be sent in. Because remember, you got just, it isn't just the first row and the last row. You got a bunch of rows in between. You got at least 4 rows in between these things. So you got kids who could move around. Anyway, there was a certain set number of kids in there, and you couldn't always tell why somebody was being moved. But also, there were logical ones, answers to questions. If you answered a question, you could end up moving up or moving down in the pecking order. How you looked to Miss Donnelly, I think that determined a lot about where you got reseated. And, again, sometimes an entire row would be demoted. And she would berate, if you were the first seat in the first row and you got something wrong, man, did you get dressed down. Oh, wow. She knew how to do it to a 6-year-old, too. She was very skilled. And just about everybody got reseated in the course of that semester we spent in the 1A. I got to the first seat in the first row once or twice, as I recall. Didn't stay there. No, I don't think anybody stayed there. I remember running up to 7th Avenue one day after they let us out of school, running up to 7th Avenue, shouting to my mother that I'd gotten 100% and a gold star on a test. I don't know if that put me in the first seat in the first row. It would probably have gotten me into the first row. And, you know, that was a number of I remember being pushed back a ways, too. So I don't know. I mean, I probably was daydreaming. Daydreaming will really get you nailed. And so that was some of the stuff that went on. And if you got something wrong on a test or something, the teacher had someone who'd gotten the answer right stand next to your seat with his composition book open to the work he'd done, and you were expected to copy that. And I found that very annoying, and I was not pleased. And, of course, we were learning how to use pencils for something other than scribbling away and trying to draw something like that. And there were pencil boxes, which we didn't appreciate then, but, oh, boy, they were pretty good things. I think they cost like a nickel. It was basically a plastic little box, and the top of it had a ruler that slid in and out, and the end of the ruler was a pencil sharpener. And, oh, that was a great thing. I mean, you could be a great writer using something like that. Later on, they sold one at the school store, of course, that you would go in and it had a little slide on it, and you could actually do the multiplication tables. And, oh, if you had one of those, you had to either give it to the teacher during multiplication tests or you had to put it in the desk and they'd trust you. Not always a good idea. So there was that. And also in the halls, we saw these men in what looked like black dresses. They were the Franciscan brothers. We didn't see them a whole lot in the first grade. Maybe they didn't want to scare the new kids. And these guys had ropes for belts on their black dresses, and their ropes had extra knots tied in them. We got explanations for all that later on. More extraordinary was that they had a huge crucifix hanging off their waists with big beads hanging down. I later learned, of course, they were wearing gigantic rosaries, which in later times in school sometimes got used to beat a boy. Oh, man, you know, getting hit with the brother hit me with the rosary. Luckily, I didn't get the crucifix. You got that crucifix. The crucifix was pretty big. The crucifix, if you swung, you know, these are adult men. If he swung that crucifix at another adult man and hit him in the head, he could kill him. The crucifix was, it was wood, but it was pretty heavy wood, and it was encased in steel lining. So if you got hit with the crucifix, you got hurt. Oh, yeah. And in the short hall between the school entrance and the door to the classroom, there were stairs leading up, which was the future for all of us, and stairs leading down to the basement. And on the other side was the auditorium where the whole school could sit down for whatever the hell would happen in there. I'll note that for St. Francis Xavier's school, in those days, there was no tuition. If you qualified, you were in. We did have to rent the books, however. And a lot of the mothers there for the first day, were crowding around. And it took a while for Miss Donnelly to get them the hell out of the classroom. There was an American flag and a huge crucifix in the corner of the room. Miss Donnelly taught us the Pledge of Allegiance and prayers. We were taught how to hold our hands in a pointy way to pray. We probably learned the Our Father and the Hail Mary that day, albeit imperfectly. You know, there's this thing some people have. Oh, it's so cute. The kids learn their prayers and they mislearn them. When we did the confession prayer, whatever the hell it's called, it starts out, "Oh, my God, I'm heartily sorry." And I used to say, "Oh, my God, I am partly sorry for all my sins." Should have meant it. Anyway, the 1A went from 9 a.m. to noon. The 1B went from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. So for 1B, we got out so late. And the first three grades were half days like that. And there were inkwells on every desk. And they were in various states. A tiny few were entirely intact with the hinged lids and the glass inkwells still there since 1914. On some desks, there was just a round hole where the inkwells had been. The teacher was armed with a fountain pen and a red pencil, and she could do a lot with that. She used Schaefer blue-black ink. the blackboards were really black, and they were on four walls. They were slate. And the other wall was all window. There were examples of written letters, upper and lower case, above the blackboards on some paper thing. It was a standard thing you could buy. And there were various pictures above the blackboards, too. Some were of famous men. I don't remember who. I was 6 years old. I didn't know any famous men. And in looking at a class photograph of the 1A for this particular program, I see that we had a snowman up there, too, above everything, a paper snowman. Exiting the 1A classroom one day, we got ambushed by the kids in the 1B. They were waiting to use the same classroom in the afternoon. And they opened the doors of the auditorium and shouted at us, 1A babies, 1A babies. This was like this tremendously insulting. It was an incisive attack. And they just hollering, 1A babies, over and over again until the teacher stopped them. And, you know, these kids were at most months older than we were. But this was also a learning experience. This is how people are. When we got out of school, we had to go up to 7th Avenue or down to 6th Avenue. No hanging out near the school. And I always went up to 7th Avenue where my mother would be waiting with the other mothers. Mothers could not come down to the school to pick up the kids. They did not want congregations in front of or near the school. And so the kids had to march up or down that block. The mothers had to wait on the corner. And that was a rule. Now, we didn't get to go into the schoolyard with the other classes. We did hear them having recess at times out there, but we didn't go with them. We went into the schoolyard on our recess, which is at a different time from the others, and it was all ours. We had the whole schoolyard, and oh, boy, we got to go in there. And the thing is, we were released into the tiny version of the schoolyard. There was a bigger schoolyard, but I think they didn't want us wandering off into forever. So we went into the small schoolyard, and do not go down those steps. Also, do not go up those steps. I went up the steps sometimes, because you could pretend it was a fort. But anyway, yes, that was something. We had it all to ourselves. Didn't last long. And we had to buy our supplies from the school. We were taught how to put the brown paper book covers onto the books we'd rented. There was a way of doing that. A prescribed way you will do this. Cellophane tape and the brown book covers we sell you. That's what you can have. No, you can't have another cover on your book. If you come in here like that, we'll send you home. And so you had to buy it. It was you know, one of those colonial types of systems. The first grade was my introduction to the composition book, that book with the marbly cover. And, oh, man, I wonder if my fondness for stationery started then with the composition book and the pencils and the little thing, pencil box you put them into, and you had paper and did things with it. Oh, boy, I wonder if that started me. Miss Donnelly started the tradition of teachers at St. Francis Xavier School telling us at age 6 that we were going to die. She and the other teachers told us that we were going to go to hell if we had sins on our souls when we died. And they told us, you're sinners. And they told us how we'd get to heaven if our souls were pure when we died. Otherwise, we'd go off to purgatory to suffer, maybe for thousands of years. If you had a mortal sin in your soul, you went right into hell, and it was described where you would go down and the devil would throw you into a furnace, and you would be cooked in there, and at one point you would come out, and you'd be a devil too, and you'd burn for eternity. And they would try to explain eternity to 6-year-olds. And however, if you only had venial sins, lesser sins than mortal sins, you would go to purgatory. And purgatory was described in detail because it was a lot like hell. And it involved being burned by a fire that would never go out and that you couldn't escape. and we were taught to pray for the poor souls in purgatory. And your time in purgatory, while wasn't infinite, it could be for thousands of years. And so they're telling these six-year-olds, you could spend 100 years, maybe 500 years. You could spend 1,000 years. We didn't know how to count. You know, what was 1,000 yet? We're not up to that yet. I mean, 100 was a big number when you're six. And you're going to spend all that time getting burned every second, no relief. And then when you've suffered enough for your sins, God will release you, and you will get to come to heaven in his merciful wonderfulness. You son of a bitch! You were cucking my six-year-old ass for 50,000 years! What the hell did I do to deserve that? You... anyway, probably go to hell for that. Anyway, so yes, that was an outburst that we never dared to bring up to the teacher, because we bought all this crap. And I almost failed art in the first grade because I didn't understand a question. I thought they wanted you to do something that you hadn't done in class. So I drew a picture of a boy in a striped shirt just to make it more difficult. And the teacher looked at that. Oh, you know, what a stupid kid. And said, no, something we did during the year. So I said, something we already did? That doesn't sound like much of a test. Anyway, she said, draw an apple. So I said, all right, I drew an apple and I got away with it. And we were taught reading and writing with pencils and all, and that was the stuff we learned.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
We also got music. Music was taught by Miss Hessian. Miss Hessian, I am sure, was born sometime in the latter half of the 19th century. I don't think she was born in the first half of it, but where in the latter half she was born, I do not know. But she was quite elderly, and she would come in and she would teach us music. And when you're six, you know, and you've never been through this before, she would come in maybe, I don't know, seemed irregular to me. Sometimes she'd just show up. And I think maybe it was once a month or something. I'm not sure. Anyway, she would suddenly show up and, you know, we wouldn't be doing other things. She would be there. And what she liked was when she walked into the class, you were all supposed to stand up and say, good morning, Miss Session. You know, something or other, Miss Session, singing it. And then she would do stuff, and sometimes we'd have to sing crap and, you know, all of this. She enjoyed it. And then when it was over, we had to all stand up and say, good morning or good afternoon, Miss Session, we thank you, Miss Session, Hessian. And she'd walk out. And that was it. This had a sad end by the seventh grade. Adolescent boys realize this is not behavior they want to engage in. And so she came in the seventh grade, and, well, she was not treated that well. And that was the last time we ever saw Miss Hessian in that, in my classes. She never came in for the eighth grade. But she kept going to the first grade and the little younger grades. So there was that. Miss Hessian, I'm sure Miss Hessian has long since departed. And that was school. I went a little bit past the first day of school, but that was school. It happened 70 years ago. Oh, what a time. And you can see how it twisted me. Let's get the train going. Ah, we gotta get the train fired up. This is how we do all our technology at BAI. Yeah, we gotta get it going here. We're really in the 21st century here. We gotta get the technology. It really is something. Okay, is it there? Is it all there? Yeah, it's there. Okay, here we go. Here comes the pitching train. Yes, the pitching train is here, and we are going to beg you for bucks. Uh-oh. Time's running out. We need you. We need you to call 1-212-209-2950. That's 1-212-209-2950. And pledge some amount of money to WBAI to keep us alive. Call that number, 1-212-209-2950, and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. When they pick up, tell them you want to do that. You'll give them your credit card number, and you'll tell them how much you want to donate on a monthly basis, because a BAI buddy is our sustaining membership program. You can donate $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, and you tell them what day of the month you want your credit card or debit card charged, and I have the hiccups. I'm pitching with hiccups here, folks. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number now. Give us a call at that number. Well, give the call center a call at that number. You can also call 1-212-209-2950 and say, I want to make a one-time donation. You can do that too. And, you know, okay, we just devoted almost an entire program to me going to school for the first time 70 years ago. You don't get that kind of stuff on most radio programs. And if you appreciate that kind of stuff, you know, and we'll get to science at a, you know, in the future too. If you appreciate that some of the things we do that are not standard for radio, well, show your appreciation by calling 1-212-209-2950 and saying you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And again, it can be $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, or you can call that same number, 1-212-209-2950, and say, I want to make a one-time donation of, you know, $10 or more, however much you want to donate. And we want to thank a couple of people. And we would like to thank Tony for donating. Thank you, Tony, for donating. And we also want to thank Bettina. Thank you a whole lot, Bettina, for donating to Back of the Book and WBAI. Join Tony and Bettina and call 1-212-209-2950. That's 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number now. We need to hear from some folks. And, you know, BAI doesn't play regular commercials. And so what we have to do is beg you, the listeners, for dough. Basically, that's what we're doing. 1-212-209-2950. Please call that number and make a donation and become a BAI buddy. Thank you if you do. We are reading that the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, which runs transportation in New York and right around here, they plan to start cracking down on bus fare evaders. Well, that's good. They say that fare evasion results in a loss of $315 million in expected revenue. I really don't like it when people sneak onto the bus or jump the turnstile. I figure, hey, I gotta pay. How come this person doesn't have to? Bleep that noise. So, yes, I hope they do arrest people, give them serious fines, and maybe that will go some ways to reversing this tendency some people have to do that. This is the same thing as the people who ride everything from electric scooters to full-fledged motorcycles on the sidewalk. Same mentality. I'm special. I don't have to follow rules. Other people, the hell with other people. I'll ride right over them. I'll knock them down. I don't care. And, hey, pay the fare? Not me. I get to ride for free wherever I please because I'm hot stuff. Well, more of those people should really have something happen. I'm suggesting fines, you know, serious fines. And if they do it enough and don't care and just pay the fines, yeah, throw them into jail for like a month at a time. Maybe more. I mean, you know, the transit system's going to fall apart if this keeps going on. And younger people seem, some younger people seem to think this is a normal way to behave. And they need to be disabused of that. And yeah, seeing their pals not having enough money for things might help. Maybe seeing some people they don't know but have seen doing this stuff having to go to jail for a month or two, that might help too. It just bothers me that I have to pay and other people don't. That's been it for Back of the Book. Coming up next is
Exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku.
Okay, we're preempted next week. Our next time on will be September 16th, 2 weeks from now. That will be our 37th anniversary program of Back of the Book. So be sure to tune in then. It's September. It's still summer. Enjoy what you can of it all. And above all, remember what that... He still has the scars from that grammar school, Dormouse said.
WBAI election time. And Saturday, September 2nd, from 4 to 6 p.m., WBAI will broadcast a candidate forum where you can hear candidates for WBAI's local station board talk about their candidacies and take questions from you, the listeners. Get your questions ready to phone or email into the forum. Instructions will be announced on the air. You will also be able to listen to the forum afterwards by going to WBAI's archives. There, you can also find and listen to two previous forums that were held Saturday, August 19th and Saturday the 26th. Tune in, listen, learn about the candidates, and please vote. Voting ends 11:59 p.m. Saturday, September 30th.
WBAI's election balloting period has started, and you can vote through September 30th, 11:59 p.m. Look out for a link to your e-ballot in the form of an email from invitations@mail.electionbuddy.com with the subject line, Vote Now, Pacifica Foundation, Inc., 2023 Local Station Elections. You may also receive a text message with a link to your e-ballot. If you need to request a new ballot, file a ballot request form by visiting elections.pacifica.org. If you do not have access to the internet, please leave a voicemail on 213-635-9363. Please only file one request, as multiple requests will slow down the processing time. It's 99.5 FM WBAI in New York and online at WBAI.org.
Extinction Diaries. A 2019 study shocked the world with the data that the world's plants are going extinct about 300 to 500 times faster than expected. In Hawaii alone, 79 plant species have gone extinct in the last 120 years. There are more than 300,000 known species of plants, and of those, only around 13,000 have been evaluated. Of those 13,000, 68% are threatened with extinction. While this data is startling, the rate of plant extinctions is actually less than that of animals, which are disappearing 1,000 times or more faster than before humans began destroying and degrading the planet's resources. However, biologists are warning that many plant species are going extinct before they are even discovered. All in all, the planet's plant extinction rate remains a significant and dire warning to humanity. Species of trees that are far more resilient than man are disappearing forever. My name is Arnold Oliveira, and this is a Small World Radio production.
Hi, this is Tony Roberts, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth since 1960.